and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. I'm your host, Rob Burrows, director for the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and 23 years United States Navy Seabees, two combat tours in Iraq, and it's been a tough week this week, and I'll tell you, you know, life just kind of goes along. Last week we were talking about all the different things that were happening from the museum and everything. This week we lost a major individual that served in our community. Mark George is the director for the Northern California Veterans Cemetery. And 2 weeks ago, they shut down the Veterans Cemetery out at Igo because they were having a COVID run out there, issues that were going on. People were getting sick left and right. And Mark was one of the individuals that got sick from the COVID, and he just progressively got worse and worse. And he passed away this week, October 14th, early in the morning, age 51, director for the Northern California Veterans Cemetery. And Mark and I served together out there at the cemetery for, 11 years. And he's like a brother. We did many things together. We served together out there at the cemetery. We did many services, many funerals. We worked together on the projects. We worked together for Memorial Day programs. We worked together for Veterans Day programs. And I had no words when they called me and told me that Mark was gone. I had no words. And it was just an extremely tough situation to lose a friend that you just saw about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and then all of a sudden he's gone, or they're gone, or she's gone, whoever it might be in your family, your close network that you might have in your life. And I still have a hard time talking about it and describing the situation. But this morning I wanted to just talk real quick this morning about Mark George. He served the United States Army. He was in the Armored Division. He was a M1 Abrams tank commander during Desert Storm. And he served with his battalion out there in the desert when they fought the Republican Guard. Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard from Iraq and Kuwait there in the Saudi Arabia desert. And he and I would sit down and we would talk on multiple occasions about how they were out there and setting up, and they did a sweeping run around through the desert and came back in the backside of Kuwait and taking out the different Iraqi tanks that they're all the middle of that attack, where the Iraqis would just raise their hands and come out of ditches in the sand and everything else and surrender to the tanks and things like that. It was a tough situation for him at that time, but you know, being in an armored tank and going tank to tank, face to face, battle to battle, tube to tube, that was a tough situation for him also. And we talk a lot about the different experiences of being out there and being in the war zone, the unknown situations about what happens, and all those different things that take place. And so Mark and I had a really good camaraderie. Like I said, he was a buddy. We worked together to be successful out there at the cemetery. He worked at the cemetery before he became the director. He was out there as part of the landscaping director to do the operations out there, to make sure that the headstones were set properly and to make sure that the grounds were kept properly and to make sure that the burial was done properly in front of the families as the families were there and what took place. And then later the position became available for him to apply for the director position. and he was chosen to be the director for the Igo Veterans Cemetery. And he served out there along with the rest of the crew. He was a hands-on guy. He was, you know, he did all of his paperwork and everything that he had to, but he would still be out there with the crew, walking the grounds, making sure that the cemetery was held and kept properly. We call Igo Veterans Cemetery, we call it Arlington West, because it's such a beautiful location. They've always done such a great job to be able to keep it pristine and nice. Right now, everything is dry and dead because of the drought. It doesn't look like it normally would because of the lack of water that the state of California has given them. As we move forward with the program, we talk a little bit more about the experience. Mark was not just involved with just the Veterans Cemetery at Igo. He was also involved with the cemetery at Monterey. And being able to work with the cemetery at Monterey, he oversaw the cemetery there at Yountville in Napa. That cemetery has veterans in it that go all the way back to the Civil War and the Spanish-American War. And so they were part of the revamping that cemetery and bringing it back to, had become dilapidated. And he was part of the organization, part of the group to oversee that and to bring it back, to redo the headstones and to make that happen. And then also they're building a new veteran cemetery down in Tustin, Southern California. And he was one of the spearheaders to be able to go down there and to work with that cemetery down there in Tustin, Orange County area, and to be able to bring that about so that there would be a veteran cemetery in Orange County. He was very involved throughout the state. But he was also very involved with the Northern California Veterans Museum. And he would invite us to put displays inside the cemetery offices there. We have a display inside the museum, the cemetery office there at Igo. And it is for the World War II veterans, Marine that was found. His body was interred and brought back from overseas. And the family was there when we did the interment there at the Igo Veterans Cemetery. And the display has all the different World War II artifacts in there with the different rifles, the M1 carbine, the M1 Grand, the 45, the different swords, bayonets, and medical items and things like that that display there for the Marine Corps for World War II. And he was instrumental in working with us to be able to make that happen. We had, a very, very good working relationship. And, Mark was the kind of guy that, you know, sometimes he was just rough around the edges. Most veterans are rough around the edges, especially if you've been in combat. There's just, there are not a lot of smooth areas. And so, sometimes you're right on the money and other times you wish you were right on the money. But this morning, as, we continue to move forward through the program, I just want you to know, that we lost a major key individual, a young man at 51 years of age. In our community that was a leader and a pusher, a motivator, and he is going to be very, very missed amongst our veterans community. Our hearts, our prayers go out to the George family. To his daughter is a Navy corpsman. She's out. She's getting ready to have a grandbaby. The baby's due in January, so he's getting ready for his first granddaughter. And so they're going to be missing that opportunity, too, as a family, to be able to share that with Grandpa. Because he's not with us any longer. And so this morning, as we continue to move forward, we just want you to keep that family in mind. They probably will not do a burial till after the first of the year, so there won't be anything that's immediate right away while they try to get their family together and get all these situations sorted out and to be able to make that happen. Next week, when I won't be here next weekend, so we're going to play the program next weekend where I did an interview with Mark last year, and we talked about the cemetery, we talked about his career, we talked about his service to our nation, and we're going to play that in honor of him and his life and his service to our nation. And so once again, I'd like you to, if you have the opportunity, to keep his family in your thoughts and in your prayers as they continue to move forward and deal with this loss. Mark chose not to get the COVID shot. And that was his choice. And if someone were to say, you should make people do things, Mark had the right and the liberty and the freedom to make that decision. And he and I never really discussed a whole lot about it. It was just one of those things that he didn't want to be forced to do something. And he was going to, do the best he could with what he had to do it with. So still at this point, it was his choice. After being in war, I'm a firm believer that when the good Lord calls your number, you go. And it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what you're doing. When we were in combat in Iraq, I saw men lose their lives all around us in combat with IEDs and enemy action and everything else. And others did not. So, I'm a firm believer that when God calls your number, you go. Mark's number was called this week, and he's gone. But we're going to remember him, and we're going to continue to honor him and to pray for his family as we move forward. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
All aboard! Haas Farms is now open, and it's family night fall fun for the whole family with a kid's roller coaster, go-karts and bumper cars, pony rides, little bug playland and petting zoo, zip lines and pumpkin cannons. Jump on the Haas Express Railroad train and cruise around the orchard. Family night is every Thursday with free general admission thanks to Sinorama. Haas Farms is now open for all the fall fun and food. Haas Kettle Corn, hot dogs, Moe's Pizza, plus beer and wine for the 21 and over. All haunted attractions are open every Friday and Saturday. The Field of Screams, the Sinister Workshop, and the Zombie Slayer paintball excursions. Come blast some zombies on the Zombie Slayer rides. Special thanks to sponsors Above Board Construction and Roofing, Redding Heating and Air, Sinorama, Redding Harley Davidson, and Only One Benji. All tickets are being sold online this year, so for complete pricing and a schedule of events, get online to HawesFarms.com. That's HawesFarms.com.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday at 8 in the morning. Come check out my music and the deep thought, and let me shatter your paradigm.
Let's keep it 100. Them traitors think they won, but them patriots coming. You fall for anything if you don't stand for something. Some people say it's time to fight, but ain't about nothing, yeah. And I only bout it, God can't bout it, nothing else. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it don't matter if you're black or white. And I know it's gonna take some sacrifice.
COVID-19 has changed the way we do business and the way we do human resources in our businesses. We have all had to learn how to pivot, renew, and thrive over the last 18 months. Join North State SHRM as they elevate human resources on Tuesday, October 26, 2021 from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. during North State SHRM's 5th Annual HR Summit. Human resources professionals, office managers, business owners, and staff involved in HR will be engaged and inspired while continuing their pursuit of professional development. Hear from a world-renowned keynote speaker and some top-tier legal and HR advisors. Join us in person at the Gaia Hotel or virtually on October 26th for North State SHRM's annual HR Summit. For tickets and information, visit northstatesHRM.org. That's northstatesHRM.org.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet. Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. with the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. See you then.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Lots of divine freedom. Fun lives to live in our own way. Our lives must define freedom. Or will we never change it away?
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed. A new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Martina McBride, God Bless America. And, you know, we just have to continue to keep our nation in our prayers as we move forward to make sure that we continue to honor our men and women who serve this country, who wear the uniform every day. You know, we might be out of Afghanistan or, quote unquote, out of Afghanistan right now. But we have men and women serving all around the world right now, especially with the ordeals going on with Russia and China in the South Pacific. And with our men and women on the aircraft carriers and on the ships and destroyers and submarines that are out there. And we want to make sure our Air Force, all of our military personnel that are out there doing their jobs. And it doesn't matter whether they're out there in the war zone or they're here at home wearing the uniform and doing the jobs that they're asked to do. They put that uniform on, they go, they do their work, they do their job, and then they come back when they're done. But we cannot remember those young men and women right now and our senior advisors that are out there serving, and to make sure that we remember them. And part of us remembering them, especially here in our community, is when we do the Christmas for the Troops program. Northern California Veterans Museum will be doing Christmas for the Troops again. It will be December 4th, which is a Saturday afternoon from 1 to 6. We're requesting a $10 donation to help offset the cost. The cost on the boxes has gone up $2 per box. So what cost us last year was $14 per box is now, it's almost $17 a box to ship a box overseas. And that's a medium size box. And so, last year we spent $5,000 just in shipping, sending those boxes overseas. So we're requesting that you would help make donations of items for us to be able to ship overseas. Non-perishable items to be able to ship and send for our military personnel. Believe me, when you're serving around the world or anywhere and you're by yourself and you get a box and it has a letter in there that says, thank you for your service, thank you for serving our country, Merry Christmas or Happy Thanksgiving, or just a thank you for what they're doing. When I was in Iraq, we used to get boxes from total strangers, and it was like, wow, we're out here busting our tails. We're working 20-hour days. The enemy's firing upon us every single day. We're in enemy action. And you come back to your hooch, and there's a box there from somebody that you've never met. And there's all kinds of goodies and things like that that are in there. And a thank you letter, usually letters from kids that say, you know, you're our hero. Please, we're praying for you. We, you know, thank you for what you're doing, all these different things. And those are so enlightening and so encouraging when you receive a care package from home especially, but from a stranger even more. And so this is our opportunity to continue to say thank you to our military personnel serving around the world through our home, through Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. But the actual project itself at Christmas time is called Christmas for the Troops. Once again, that will be December 4th. It'll be 1 to 6 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. We will have lunch there. That $10 donation helps to cover your lunch and then also to be able to help offset the cost on shipping those boxes. For more information, you can call my phone, which is 510-8210, 510-8210. And my recommendation to you is when you go out and buy that bag of candy for Chris or for Halloween, buy an extra bag of candy for the troops. Drop that bag of candy off, and we'll help put those in the boxes and help ship those things off like that. And if you want to put together a letter of thanks or anything along those lines, you just include those items along with them. It will make sure that they get put in a box. Or you can come to the event December 4th, and you can put them in a box yourself. And that's another opportunity for you to be involved, to be able to pack a box that we're going to ship off to our troops, sailors, airmen, wherever they may be, and to make sure that we say thank you to them for the service, sometimes the thankless service, the most dangerous service that's out there that they're performing for us. Our guest this morning is Clark Maccabee, United States Navy Lieutenant. And good morning, Clark. Thank you for being here this morning.
Morning, Rob. Thank you for inviting me.
It's
an honor and a privilege.
As I go through the community and I find the different individuals I've been talking with and different things all the time, and then you and I, we happen to come across each other's path twice in the last month, once at the Iron Soldier Ride and then downtown Cottonwood last weekend at the bazaar that they were having there. And you and I have talked a lot of different times, and you are also a museum director for Clear Lake, correct?
I'm actually the curator, but same thing as a director. I run three museums for the County of Lake. We have a museum in Lakeport, Middletown, and Lower Lake, so keeps me hopping. I'm the only full-time employee, but it's a county job. They take good care of me.
Well, then the one thing about being a curator is you get to hold and to look at and to examine all of the things who come through the door. And that's almost like Christmas every day sometimes, the historical aspect of it.
It's a really cool job. And this is my third set of county museums. I'm from the west side of Washington. But just the different items and, you know, each item, whether it's a piece of military memorabilia, hardware, or a Native American basket, it has its story. And the job as a curator is to be a good storyteller. Sometimes we get things that we don't know what the provenance is. In other words, where it came from. Other times we get these marvelous items. One of our treasured collections is, and I feel bad, I can't remember the guy's actual name, but his nickname was Old Fuss and Feathers. And he was a general right at the beginning of the Civil War, but he was the longest serving commander of the Army in the United States ever. And it was a letter for a civilian, but it basically said, help this guy all the way across the United States to California, you know, render whatever assistance he requires. And it was signed by Old Fuss and Feathers. And, you know, it's a piece of history of this very famous American, and the fact that it went into little old Lake County and survived is amazing. And as you know, the objects belong to people, and people, what's the most important thing? It's what kind of drew me into history was my grandfather and great uncles and great grandfather were all steam era loggers. And so there was all these photos in the family of them, working in the woods. And, you know, it said you weren't a logger until you'd worked a $2 day and had your picture taken.
A $2 day.
And looking at all those photographs, I got interested in the mechanical side of it, but also the faces staring back from 70, 80 years ago. And, you know, each one of those men had a story and a family. And, I don't want to get political, but, most loggers I've ever met, and I've met a lot in my life, interviewed a lot, they have a reverence for the woods that people don't understand.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a break. Our guest this morning is Clark Backaby, United States Navy Lieutenant. And we come back, we're going to talk some more about the United States Navy, and then we'll come back to the museum aspect toward the end of the show. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wing Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Kern Creek, and Airport Road. Come check out our sale October 18th through the 31st. With this fall weather, it's a perfect time to save big when ordering your sod for your yard or planting a winter garden. Garden Power soil is only $45.99 a yard. King Kong winterizer fertilizer for only $24.99 a bag. Need to update your tools? All hand tools, including shovels, rakes, picks, and more, all drastically reduced. Been wanting a patio or pathway? Base light pavers and retaining wall is all on sale. As always, Lauk's Landscape Supply carries all your sand, soils, barks, and gravels for your projects, whether you pick up or we deliver. Now's the chance to save big October 18th through the 31st at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Kern Creek, and Airport Road. Check us out on the web at louckslandscape.com or give us a call at 378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest this morning is Lieutenant Clark McAbee, United States Navy. And Clark, once again, thank you for being here this morning. As we get ready for this next segment, I want to talk a little bit about the influences in your life from your family that kind of gave you the inspiration to join the Navy or the military, and how those affected you as you were growing up.
Well, just to be totally accurate, it should be Lieutenant United States Naval Reserve dash R. I was the epitome of a weekend warrior. So when Rob asked me to do this, and Rob and I have known each other for about almost 4 years now, because I stopped in the Vets Museum there in Anderson.
Actually, I think it's almost profession. 6 years. 2015.
Well, I was in here then, so.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I may have stopped here when I interviewed earlier. You're right, for a job down here, which I didn't get, but it all worked out. Anyway, the influences in my choice in joining the military, because I'm a cold warrior, just so everybody knows, never was in combat, never even got shot at, got yelled at a lot by Marines. But I was thinking about this earlier today, and it would have to be my mother and my father and my brother. And I don't know why, but I'm getting a little bit emotional. That's what Anchor's Way does to me.
That's okay. That's a love for the Navy right there.
My mother was a Rosie the Riveter. My dad was a Boeing flight line mechanic first part of the war. Actually, first part of the war, he was down at Long Beach. Lifeguard getting his airframe and engines. They met at a roller skating rink. My mom went out with him because he didn't smoke and he had a motorcycle, and she'd never ridden on a motorcycle. But they got married, and so this kind of set the stage. They got married in Vegas the night before Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
December 6th. So they woke up to Pearl Harbor, and he had gotten a job with North American and was supposed to move to Salt Lake City. They got to Salt Lake City, spent all their money to get there, and the contract got canceled. So he had to wire money to go back to Washington State, get money from his father at the time. And my dad grew up in the woods. He was a logger, so he was in his early 20s. He'd seen death and so forth and worked really hard. And he went to work as a flight line mechanic. My mom became a Rosie the Riveter, and they were married. And he would come in from the flight line, and she was a cute young blonde, and so all the other guys were trying to make time with her, and I don't think that sat too well with him. And so he just decided in 1943 he wanted to do his part overseas. So he enlisted in the Air Force, actually lied. Of course, who hasn't enlisted in one of the branches and lied to either their parents, their girlfriends, or the recruiter. But he told her he got drafted. Well, he had a wartime deferment because he was an airplane. He's a B-17 mechanic. And he went to Grand Island, Nebraska, became a B-29 flight engineer. And he was the oldest of the six kids in his family. And his hero was Lieutenant Commander Robert Clark McAbee. And so that's my namesake. And Robert was, growing up in the logging camp, Robert was my dad's cousin, but he was his older brother. Because he was older. And he went off to school and he became naval aviator during World War II. And one of the times, this would never happen in today's Navy or military, but Robert flew a TBM Avenger out to wherever my dad was. He may have been at Clark Air Base in the Philippines, or he may have actually been on Tinian. He flew off his carrier, picked my dad up, this sergeant in the Army Air Corps, flew him back to the aircraft carrier, gave him a tour, and then flew him back. But, you know, back then, naval aviators flew all kinds of stuff. Fight or yeah, he died in an F-6 Hellcat right at the end of the war. There was a major storm, and he had to ditch and he drowned. But he was actually buried on Guam, and then they brought him back. So, you know, my dad did his time. He watched them load the second atomic bomb. His squadron was right next to the 509th, and he was Semper Paratus. It was a 6-bomb group, so it had a pirate. Think of Jean Lafitte. So their B-29s had pirates on the thing. And so they didn't like the 509th composite group, which was the atomic bomb squadron, because they weren't flying over the Empire. They weren't getting shot at. They weren't, you know, ending up in the middle of the Pacific Ocean when their airplane ran out of gas.
Now, your dad flew night missions, didn't he, in the B-29?
Yeah, he did 20. He was a flight engineer, and then also in the B-29, they had remote control turrets. So he actually was a flight engineer, and each gunnery station could actually control all of them. Obviously, you couldn't see very well, but they had periscopes. And so he had four. His main position, he was a primary nose gunner in the upper turret, which had four 50 caliber machine guns. But he did all the night missions. He was there the night they burned over 11 square miles out of Tokyo doing firebombing.
Wow.
And the toughest, he said, were the night missions when they flew low level and were mining Japanese harbors, because they were doing it by radar. And radar wasn't very accurate during World War II, so those were a little bit hairy.
So at low level, was it 50 feet off the deck, 100 feet off the deck?
I'm guessing it was
tall enough not to hit a ship out there.
Yeah, he never said how low they were going. I knew they flew at night when they were bombing the cities. They flew 5,000 to 7,000 feet in a bomber that was designed to drop its bombs from 30,000 feet. I'm guessing it was a little bit lower than that, but still, you know, I don't know if it's right on the deck, but it would have been low, and they would, you know, they would go in with four ships and sometimes split up and just bomb by radar, drop sea mines, and they actually sunk a lot of Japanese shipping.
That was in 43.
No, that was in 40. That would have been in 45. His unit, I believe, got their spring of 45.
So now they also ran daylight missions also, didn't they?
They did for a while, but they weren't very effective because they were bombing from 30,000 feet and the jet stream
had
an effect. So Curtis LeMay saw what the British were doing to Germany with their night fire bombing, and he said, we're going to do this, because the thing about the B-29 at 30,000 feet, there were very few Japanese fighters that could get up there. In fact, at 30,000 feet, the B-29 was faster than a Zero fighter. So they were almost untouchable at that height, other than flak. They just couldn't hit what they wanted to hit because of the, you know, the wind streams and so forth. So LeMay stripped all the guns and loaded them full of incendiary bombs, and they would go in at night between 5,000 and 7,000 feet. And one of the things my dad told me was, you could read a newspaper in the cockpit from the searchlights.
It was that bright.
That bright, the searchlights, if you got lit up.
And that was when they were flying about 5,000 to 7,000 feet.
Yeah.
So it was just like right on them.
Yeah.
Our guest this morning is Clark Maccabee, the United States Navy Lieutenant Reserve. Navy Reserve. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
We're here with Mortgage Matt from Megastar Financial here in Reading. Matt, what if someone has just recently purchased a home or recently financed, like a year ago?
You know, this last year has been insane. A lot of people with the work from home phenomena, there's a lot of people moving here from metropolitan areas, which has, you know, affected the supply and demand of this market. That has really boosted the value of houses. So right now, people are looking to remodel their home or consolidate debt. They're able to do that at a lower cost with a cash out refinance than they ever have in history.
Talk about the value of using a local mortgage mortgage company, and why Megastar Financial?
The nice thing about us being local is our accessibility. You mean people can meet with us in a safe way, but whatever people are comfortable with. We can do an application process online on our website, or we can do an application together over the phone.
Megastar Financial, America's most trusted mortgage company, located at 920 Hilltop Drive next door to Chuck E. Cheese. Call 999-9000 or get started online at megastarreading.com. NMLS 1162668.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday at 8 in the morning. Come check out my music and the deep thought and let me shatter your paradigm.
Let's keep it a honey. Them traitors think they won, but them patriots coming. You fall for anything if you don't stand for something. Some people say it's time to fight, but ain't about nothing, yeah. And I only bout it, God came out of nothing else. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it don't matter if you're black or white. And I know it's gonna take some sacrifice.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
My dear son, it's almost June. I hope this letter catches up with you and finds you well. It's been dry, but they're calling for rain, and everything's the same old same. Johnsonville. Your stubborn old daddy ain't said too much, but I'm sure you know he sends his love. And she goes on in a letter from home. I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared in our boots ain't muddy, and they all laugh like there's something funny about the way I talk when I say mama sends her best, y'all. I fold it up and put it in my shirt, pick up my gun and get back to work, and it keeps me driving on, waiting on letters from home. My dearest love, it's almost dawn. I've been lying here all night long, wondering where you might be. I saw your mama and I showed her the ring. Man on a television said something, so I couldn't sleep. But I'll be alright, I'm just missing you. And this is me kissing you. X's and O's in a letter from home. I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared in our boots ain't muddy, and they all laugh cause she calls me honey, but they take it hard cause
pick up my gun and get back to work. And it keeps me driving on, waiting on letters from home. Dear son, I know I ain't written. And sitting here tonight alone in the kitchen, it occurs to me I might not have said it, so I'll say it now. Son, you make me proud. I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared and our boots ain't muddy, but no one laughs, cause there ain't nothing funny when a soldier cries. And I just wipe my eyes. I fold it up and put it in my shirt, pick up my gun and get back to work. And it keeps me driving on, waiting on. Letters from home.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest this morning, Clark Maccabee, United States Navy, Lieutenant in the United States Naval Reserve. And we're talking about influence in his life between his mom and his dad, as to the reasons that he went into the military. Talking about his dad being a B-29 navigator engineer.
No, flight engineer.
Flight engineer. And your mom was a Rosie Riveter. And, you know, a lot of people kind of hear that term. You know, we've gotten so far away from 75 years ago from World War II that a lot of people don't understand what is a Rosie Riveter and how that influenced the war with what she did.
Well, what American discovered during the war, because it was total war, it was world war, all the young men were getting trained and shipped off, the ones that were physically qualified. They were getting shipped off to training to go to war in the Pacific or in Europe. And so there was this shortage, and, you know, to win that war, it was a war of attrition. And so if we could outbuild the Japanese and we could outbuild the Germans in tanks, ships, airplanes, et cetera, we would win the war. And, you know, it was inevitable, after Pearl Harbor, without the U.S. carriers being there, not being sunk, it was inevitable that we would win the war, most likely. It was just how long it'd take. And so she went to work, as a Rosie the Riveter. She actually didn't rivet in the Boeing Renton plant. She worked on B-17s. She actually drilled, they called them the Longeron holes. So she would, she would actually set, I think, I can't even remember what the clamp's called, but there would be somebody above drilling down, and he would put the hole in, and then she would put this clamp in to kind of sort of set the jig for the rest of the holes. But it was noisy and it was oily. And once my dad went off to, he enlisted, as I said previously, he lied to her, told her he got drafted. And he went off to Grand Island in Nebraska. She quit, cause guys were always coming in. She was a cute young blonde and guys were always trying to pick her up, and it was noisy and oily and uncomfortable and loud, and she didn't like it. So then she went, for a while she worked with, sisters-in-law in the Berry factories, canneries during the war. And then she spent some time back in Texas with her family. And at one point late in the war, she was working at a Japanese laundry. And one of the things people don't understand necessarily now about the incarceration of the Japanese Americans at the beginning of World War II, it was the West Coast Exclusion Zone. It was 100 miles deep. So if you lived in Spokane, Washington, or Texas, and were Japanese or Japanese American, you didn't get incarcerated. It was the ones on the coast. It wasn't universal. Still, it was a bad thing, removing somebody's inalienable rights under the Constitution. And so it was really interesting. We have a V letter, and if nobody's familiar with a V letter, it was basically a microfilm photograph of a letter, so you could reduce the size and the weight of the letter and send it off around the world. And we have this V letter in the family where she tells him she's working at this Japanese laundry in Texas, and he's a little bit upset in his response, which only took 11 days. And this is 1945, and that shows you just how powerful the United States military machine was at that time, that they could send a letter. And this is before jet airliners, people. They could send a letter by ship. They could send a letter back and forth to this Tinian in the South Pacific. And he's complaining, here I am, you know, getting shot at by the Japanese over the empire, because it was the Japanese empire. And that's what they referred to it as, the empire. And you're working at a Japanese laundry. So ultimately I asked her why she quit that one. She said it wasn't necessarily because of your dad. That was part of it, but the chemicals were nasty.
She didn't like that either. How ironic, 11 days during World War II for a letter, and now with all of our technology and capability, it's still 11 days to get a letter from one part of the United States to the other, or even from Reading to Sacramento and back to our local area. So it's you know, just how crazy that is. Now, when you got ready to enlist, did you enlist or how did that work?
I went up to the naval recruiter, the closest officer recruiter, because I had a degree in history. I went into the naval recruiter in Bellevue, Washington, and, you know, I was still in pretty good shape. Had passed some flight physical and so forth, and so I had... I looked kind of over at the Marine, and I just didn't think I could hack Marine Corps Infantry School.
Well, that's a good determination right there. When my son got ready to go to the Navy was out to lunch, and the Marine said, "Hey, why don't you come over here and we'll hook you up." So we ended up joining the Marine Corps instead of the Navy, because literally the Navy was out to lunch. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Authorities in Texas say three constable deputies were shot in an ambush outside of a bar in Houston. One is dead, two others wounded. Officials said at a news conference the constable deputies were working an extra shift at the bar early today when they responded to a suspected robbery outside. Preliminary information indicates somebody opened fire on the deputies from behind. U.S. health officials are setting the stage for a national COVID-19 vaccination campaign for younger children. Here's correspondent Ben Thomas.
Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine is currently being given to people as young as 12. Over the next 3 weeks, federal officials will discuss making smaller dose versions available to children ages 5 to 11. States can pre-order doses starting next week. To help them prepare, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has sent out a 7-page planning guide. It notes pharmacies can give COVID-19 shots to children, but clarifies that only doses prepared and packaged specifically for children are to be used. It does not speak to some thornier questions, such as how much school-based clinics should be relied on, or whether kids should be required to get vaccinated to attend school in person. I'm Ben Thomas.
The Biden administration says it plans to reinstate a Trump-era border policy next month to make asylum seekers wait in Mexico for hearings in U.S. Immigration Court to comply with a judge's order.
Mexican officials want cases to conclude within 6 months and want asylum seekers to have timely and accurate information about hearing dates and times and better access to legal counsel. They also want exemptions for what they call vulnerable populations and better coordination on locations and times of day that asylum seekers are returned to Mexico.
And that report from correspondent Mike Hempen. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow was up 382 points. More on these stories from townhall.com.
It's time for holiday cleaning. Before you replace your carpets due to pet stains and odors, you must try Genesis 950. The reviews are amazing as this is one product that works. With water, it breaks down the bonds of stains and odors so they're gone for good. Its antibacterial component removes pet odors from carpet and padding. It can be used in a carpet cleaning machine and it's green, so it's safe for your family and pets. Genesis 950 is made in America. If you are tired of pet cleaners that don't work, it's time to buy Genesis 950. 1 gallon of industrial strength Genesis 950 makes up to 7 gallons of cleaner. Genesis 950 is great for bathrooms, kitchens, floors, upholstery, and grease stains. Perfect holiday gift for pet owners. Genesis 950 has great customer service, always willing to help with your particular problem. Order 1 gallon direct at Genesis950.com to receive a free spray bottle, free shipping, and a $10 coupon using code PETS. That's Genesis950.com. Coupon only available for 1 gallon purchase. Genesis 950, much cheaper than replacing your carpets.
Seven offshore wind farms would be developed on the east and west coast and in the Gulf of Mexico under a new plan from the Biden administration.
The projects are part of President Biden's plan to deploy 30 gigawatts of offshore wind energy by 2030. That would generate enough electricity to power more than 10 million homes. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland says her department hopes to hold lease sales by 2025 off the coasts of Maine, New York, and the Mid-Atlantic, as well as the Carolinas, California, Oregon, and the Gulf of Mexico.
That's correspondent Jeremy House reporting. Exposure to a synthetic group of chemicals known as phthalates used in a number of products, including shampoo, could contribute to some 100,000 premature deaths each year, according to a new study in the Journal of Environmental Pollutions. Phthalates used to make plastics and other products, and that affects primarily elderly Americans. More from townhall.com. South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, has fired the state oil corporation boss.
Ol Ring Morwell recently denied the allegation that he'd ordered the accounts office in the state-run oil company to transfer $250 million to his private bank accounts in Dubai and Khartoum. He'd also been accused of giving jobs in the Nile Petroleum Corporation to his relatives. South Sudan is one of the most oil-dependent countries in the world, with oil revenue accounting for around 90% of the government's income. A recent report by UN experts drew a direct link between the massive looting of this wealth and the continuous conflict in the country that traps millions of people in poverty.
That's the BBC's Will Ross reporting. The World Health Organization says the number of people killed by tuberculosis has risen for the first time in more than a decade. That's largely because fewer people have been getting tested and treated as resources have been diverted to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
It's the guts and it's the glory. 100 stripes, 100 stories. It's the pledge of allegiance on the 4th of July. It's some handwritten letters from home. It's some sleepless nights alone. It's his newborn baby he left with his wife. Mr. Red, White, and Blue. Later. The swamps of Louisiana, to the golden coast of California, Uncle Sam's the
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest this morning is Clark Maccabee, United States Navy Lieutenant. And, Clark, we've been talking about the influences in your family between your mom and your dad and getting ready to go into boot camp. And then you're getting ready to go to Officers Candidate School. And we want to talk a little bit about you getting ready to go through your boot camp and then going to OCS and some of those experiences. Now, this is during the Cold War, so, you know, you're not going to be going off and doing, I mean, the whole United States is kind of held back, but even during the Cold War, with all the different espionage and everything else that was going on during that time, we still were losing men and women across the world due to the Cold War. That's still actually taking place today with Russia and China right now.
Well, yeah, and, you know, some people may not understand the whole sentiment, you know, whether reserve or active, retired, veteran, current, you know, you raise your right hand and you do literally write a blank check to the United States of America. And, you know, unfortunately, if you're going to win wars, you got to train for war. And training for war is as close as it's going to get to war if you're not actually at war. And it's dangerous. You know, it's dangerous stuff. You know, unfortunately, people get run over by tanks. People fall overboard. The USS Washington during World War II battleship, just a one class previous to the Iowa class, well known. They lost an admiral. He just disappeared, fell overboard. They lost their doggone admiral. So it is inherently dangerous. So I'm getting ready to go in. It's the early part of the Cold War. Ronald Reagan, I believe, is president. And I go into this. I want to be my brother went through Air Force ROTC at Central Washington State College, now Central Washington State University. He was one of my other heroes, 10 years older. And so he told me, you know, you should go in as an officer. I got my degree. I went in to the recruiting station. The Marine, I talked to him first, and he said, well, you know, before you can do anything like aviation or whatever, you got to go through platoon. I think it's the PLC, platoon leadership course. So basically you got to become an infantry company commander. And if that works out for
in
you,
the Marine Corps.
In the Marine Corps, then you can maybe fly airplanes or, you know, do whatever they do in the Marine Corps. And so I go, that's not me. You know, I played football and was two-a-days and stuff like that, but that was not me. So then I went to the Navy guy and he looked at my physical and like, oh yeah, we have this thing called Buds UDT, and he handed me the brochure. And this was before anybody really knew anything outside of the Navy about the SEALs. And even the Navy, your average naval person didn't know that much about SEALs because they were secret.
Right.
And
spec ops.
So I go, okay, I know a little bit about some of this terminology. So underwater demolition team, so an EOD, because that's what he described it as, UDT, EOD, and I go, so let me get this straight. You want me to dive underwater and defuse bombs, possibly nuclear bombs that get dropped by accident into the ocean? I said, nah, I don't see myself doing that. So then there was Aviation Officer Candidate School down at Pensacola, and ultimately I was fortunate enough, passed the physical, went down there and spent, normally it's 13 weeks. I had a few problems. I drove all the way down from, so I got held back a few times, but I drove all the way down from Washington State to Pensacola, Florida, so about as far as you could drive. And, you know, I would try to get in shape, you know, I was trying to get in shape, thought I was in shape. Wasn't really in shape compared to Marine Corps standards. And so I do jogging at the motel and so forth.
So you tried not to get in the Marine Corps, and you still ended up with the Marine Corps as your...
Yeah, funny how that worked. And I'm going to say this really quick. I think that was a brilliant move by the Navy, that they didn't have Navy petty officers training their future naval flight officers, because they couldn't physically hurt us, but... Pardon my French, they kicked our ass. And their guys that I was in class with, I think they still hate Marines. I think they do.
So kind of like an officer and a gentleman.
Well, yes, it actually was very ironic. I was in Pensacola going through the same school that's depicted portrayed in the Hollywood movie Officer and a Gentleman, which was being filmed at the same time I'm in Pensacola in my home state of Fort Worden, so literally less than 100 miles from my house. So that was pretty ironic. And there are parts of that movie that are pretty accurate. So how were the drill instructors? Well, if you've seen Full Metal Jacket, the first half of that is about boot camp. And literally every time I watch the first half of that movie, I laugh my ass off because three quarters of the words that come out of Gunny Arley Ermey's mouth, I heard from the Marine drill instructors, because they all go to the same school. They all learn the same bad Jodies. They all learn to cuss. They all learn to insult your mother, your father, your girlfriends. And so that was what, and, you know, my luck, I inherited my dad's luck. He said, if it wasn't for bad luck, I would have no luck at all.
I've heard that before.
And so I get the toughest legendary Marine Corps drill instructor. And that's a crazy thing about that. I can't even remember my roommates' names. I remember a few guys' names from going through that 14, 15 weeks. I remember every one of my Marine drill instructors. Gunnery Sergeant Thixton, United States Marine Corps. And I was in poopy week with him. So where we were the silver helmet liners and we're in just regular fatigue greens and they're kicking our tail, calling us college boys. And you drank your whiskey, you smoked your dope, you ate your cheeseburgers and did something to the world. I won't, you know, it's a public show, so I can't say exactly what they said. And so I said I had been running, and so I had gotten an ingrown toenail. So they pulled me out and put me on medical hold while they did some minor surgery on my foot, and then I recovered, and then I got lucky again. I was Staff Sergeant Walker's United States Marine Corps second class. I was in that class, his second. So we called ourselves Walker's second to none. Well, guess who was his mentor?
Dixon.
Gunnery Sergeant Thixton, United States Marine Corps. And, you know, they could do everything but hit us. So the movie is pretty accurate. We did the Dilbert Dunker, which was pretty easy. The Hilo Dunker wasn't very easy. I may talk a little bit about that later. You know, I was a lineman. I played both sides in high school, so that kind of gives you what my build was. So there was a time when all I had to do is pass the obstacle course. So every morning at 5 a.m., I would go run the obstacle course. But that was near the end of the training. I'd gone through deep water survival. And the great thing about Thixton was, you know, he knew I was going to get through probably. He said, "Hey, Mac, did you pass this morning?" "Aye, aye, sir."
So he was always checking on you to see how you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
So we're talking with Clark McAbee, the United States Lieutenant. We're talking about going through OCS as Officer Candidate School. Coming up on a break, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
This is KCNR Radio, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, and streaming live at KCNR1460.com with Carl and Linda Bach.
Working remotely and wanting to level up by maximizing your working experience? Stop by Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East. Rachel left a 5-star review for Drop-In. Love this place. I moved to Redding recently from the Bay Area and work remotely full-time. Started going nuts at home, and luckily, this place is a great location and meets my needs beyond my expectations. They also left a 5-star review. Very productive place. It took me a few hours at Drop-In to finish a few days' work at home. Internet is super fast. Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East in Redding.
This is RC with Tobacco and Brew. This month only, come down and celebrate Bricktoberfest. Tobacco and Brew is celebrating Oktoberfest this month with Brickhouse Cigars. Buy any 5 Brickhouse cigars and you will immediately receive a beer mug for free. Holding over 40 ounces of beer, this mug is colossal. Check out our fantastic beer selection while you're here. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Redding, California.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Redding has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
I know you're worn, I know you're torn. You're losing all your hope, 'cause you're a long way from home. Oh, I know you're worried, I know you're scared. I'd like to put my arms around you, tell you I care. Hope is in heaven, not far away. Just close your eyes, what you say, feel him around you, he's everywhere, reaching to touch you, know that he's there, deep in the heart of a war, he hears a soldier's prayer. Ask, he'll protect you, God. What's on your mind? It just takes a moment if you take the time. Hope is in heaven, not far away. Just close your eyes, he hears what you say. Feel him around you, he's everywhere, reaching to touch you. Heard a soldier.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Rob Burrows here, and our guest again is Clark Maccabee, United States Navy Lieutenant. We're talking about going through OCS right now and dealing with the Marine Corps instructors and the different types of responsibilities that you had. It's kind of like if you've ever seen the movie Officer and a Gentleman, you're referring back to some of those. Because a lot of people seen that movie, they can kind of visualize some of those things that you went through.
Yes, very much so. And just to kind of finish the end, you know, the most some of the Marines, you felt they were pretty sadistic. Others weren't.
Most Marines are pretty sadistic.
It was one of the ones, he never really was my direct instructor, but you had to show respect to all of them because they were lurking, hiding everywhere, trying to catch you. They would literally, while you're in class doing navigation or seamanship or learning the heritage of the Navy, they would look through the class window to see who was falling asleep. For you young men and women going in to the military, catch up on your sleep because sleep will be at a premium in boot camp. There's just not enough time. But so one of the things that we did deep water ejection and survival training. So it was to simulate, you know, crashing at night into the water in a single place aircraft was the Dilbert dunker. And then the Hilo dunker was, think of a big barrel, basically like a helicopter or a multi-place aircraft cockpit, and it was on gimbals, so they could rotate it completely upside down. And so they would drop you in, and we did four drops, we called them. And we're wearing flight suits, tennis shoes, and two of the drops were blackout goggles. So the first drop you got tested on, getting out of it, and the second drop, or the fourth drop you got tested on. And they kind of changed things up each drop. So the first one, you know, kind of get you used to it. There was four people in it, pilot, co-pilot in the front, and then two guys in the cargo compartment and no blackout goggles on. So daylight ditching. So get out the closest. They drop you underwater, several feet underwater. Get out the closest exit. Well, really easy. If you're pilot, co-pilot, you have a window right next to you. And then you swap seats. So, you know, it was always changing it up so it's a little bit uninspected. And I remember the first, I think it was the second drop, was blackout goggles. I was in the cargo compartment. I was sure I'd found the opening, and I hit my flight helmet like four times against a bulkhead. I was close, but not on it. And I said, at that point, screw this. Off came the goggles, and out I swam. And so I ended up having to go through it twice because on my fourth one, the diver claimed I had a weak pull. In other words, you're simulating getting out of a sinking aircraft, taking you to the bottom of the ocean if you don't get out. And so I didn't pull hard enough as I was exiting through the cargo door, so I had to do it again. But good training. The guy said, listen, every one of you guys, and we could all hold our breath for 2 minutes. I mean, the Navy tried to drown us. They purposely tried to drown us so we would know how to take our pants off and make a life preserver. Right. How to swim. We had to swim a mile in 70 minutes. First time I've ever sweated in a swimming pool. And ultimately I got through that, but, it was, you know, that's where they kind of developed a teammate here because I'm on swim hold. And we would swim every day, you know, waiting to do the Hilo dunker. We literally swam every day, ran the obstacle course one day, and then the next day we did the cross-country course. But I can remember one guy, he'd finished everything. He'd done his academics. The only thing standing between him and being in a Navy aircraft was not being able to do the tower jump. He had this incredible fear of heights. I can remember, you know, the half dozen or so of us there, and even the instructors just encouraging this guy to, you know, jump off that 30-foot tower, because what you had to do is jump off the 30-foot tower feet first and swim at the bottom of the pool, the length of the pool, to get yourself, if it was a real ship sinking, to get yourself away from the burning fuel and debris.
Oil. Yeah.
So he finally did it, and, you know, everybody applauded because, you know, It was a teammate that got finally got the job done, finally found his courage.
Well, many times in the military, I mean, the only thing that keeps you moving forward is that courage. And there's so many times when so many people don't have that courage. It's like you said, it becomes a team effort in order to encourage that person to overcome a fear that they've had in their entire life. And now all of a sudden you have to mm-hmm. overcome that fear. In training, it's one thing because it's training. But then you take that training into the field, and now you're in an enemy action, and now the fear is reality, and now it's life and death. Even sometimes in training, it's life and death. But when you're in harm's way, that's where you have to literally reach inside of you and muster every ounce of courage for you to move forward. And especially if you're a leader, because everybody else is watching you. Because you're the leader in that situation, and if you fail in that situation, your men lose confidence, and they fail in that situation too. Or the next person steps up to the place, and they become the new leader.
Right. I was fortunate. I met two former Blue Angels, and just great guys. The first one was Captain Rasmussen. He was the commandant of Aviation Officer Candidate School at the time, and he was just a great guy, really laid back, not you know, your typical obnoxious fighter pilot, you know, kind of arrogant attitude. He had a guest cottage, and so when my young wife and son came down, I'm still enlisted, I'm an E5 for pay purposes, I'm not yet an officer, and he enabled us to stay there for a weekend when she came down until we could get an apartment. But then I met Captain Don Simmons at Miramar, and he was a former Blue Angel, and he was CAG at the time, Commander Air Group 30, the West Coast Reserve Air Wing, and I was down there doing 6-week active duty, and he said, my nickname was Brutus, and he said, you know, I know you're doing us a favor coming down here, I want you to, You know, you got to go home every other weekend and go see I was acting air intelligence officer for the wing doing inspections, ADMAT inspections. And he says, so I want your dirty white ass on a Navy C-9 going north. Understood? Aye, aye, sir. But, you know, he was just, and here's a guy that flew F-14s, F-18s, A-7s, because he was tagged, so he could literally fly everything in the air wing. And, oh, by the way, his day job, when he went back full-time active duty, TAR, they call it, training and reserves, he was a Delta DC-10 captain at the time, but he went back in the Navy full-time for 2 years to be the CAG. Great guy. Just great, great, great leader.
You know, it's not very often when you're doing your Navy career that you come across leadership like that. But when you do, it really makes a difference in your own capability, because those people either inspire you to be better and to rise to the occasion, or they kick you to the curb and you stay there at the curb. And so I can remember having the opportunity to meet many great leaders. Some I didn't like, some it didn't matter, some that you admired in everything that they did. But every one of those leaders brings a different capability into your career.
Absolutely.
And so you use it as a learning experience. We call it an LA, a learning experience, to either motivate your butt to keep you moving forward or to overcome it, because, you know, because you got your butt handed to you. And now you've got to overcome that situation and rise to the occasion. So, yeah, I think that happens in everybody's career. If they stay around long enough, some guys say, you know, I'm done with this. I'm gone. But otherwise, you suck it up, you deal with it, and tomorrow's another day, and you achieve or overcome those obstacles mm-hmm. that are in your career, in your life. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest, Clark McAbee, United States Navy Lieutenant. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Fern Creek, and Airport Road. Come check out our sale October 18th through the 31st. With this fall weather, it's a perfect time to save big when ordering your sod for your yard or planting a winter garden. Garden Power soil is only $45.99 a yard. King Kong winterizer fertilizer for only $24.99 a bag. Need to update your tools? All hand tools, including shovels, rakes, picks, and more, all drastically reduced. Been wanting a patio or pathway? Base light pavers and retaining wall is all on sale. As always, Lauk's Landscape Supply carries all your sand, soils, barks, and gravels for your projects. Whether you pick up or we deliver, now's the chance to save big October 18th through the 31st at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Fern Creek, and Airport Road. Check us out on the web at louckslandscape.com or give us a call at 378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Thinking about starting a new career or upskilling for the career you have right now? It's never too late to start at Shasta College. Late start classes and 8-week compressed classes are still available. Reskill for those new jobs that are emerging in Shasta County. Find out today about their veterans programs and free tuition. All of this at Shasta College. Go to shastacollege.edu.
He's been living for the last 8 months, and it ain't about the badges on his uniform, and it ain't about the oil like they say it is in the news. You'll never hear him say it don't matter anymore, 'cause what matters most is still at home. Gathered round the table, barely able to get through the day without thinking about him, and their life without him. So he makes sure that they know that he knows what matters most. She gets mad when someone talks bad. Red, white, and blue. She says they don't understand what it stands for. Said if they spend just one day on their knees in her shoes, they'd be a little more appreciative of that, I'm sure. What matters most?
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest again, Clark Maccabee, United States Navy Lieutenant. And we've been talking about his going through OCS, Officer Candidate School. And now we've talked, we could spend the rest of the program on that, Clark. Right. There's so many good things to talk about. We want to talk a little bit. You were an intel officer. We want to talk a little bit more about where you were boots on the ground and some of the things that you did in your actual position as an officer.
Well, one of the things, I was an intel officer. It took a while. I got my top secret security clearance SBI, they call it special background investigation. And then they started sending me, since I was in the reserves, to like 2-week schools or 1-week schools. And the beauty of the reserves, I tell people, is there's no place in the world they could send me that I couldn't hack for 2 weeks after all the time with the Marine drill instructors. So I really enjoyed the work. I first started out in, sounded really sexy, like, ooh, these guys must be super great. Fleet Intelligence Reserve Support Team or something or other, PAC, Pacific, 1689. So I worked on, basically amphibious landing, packets. Back then we didn't have any, it was all photography. And so you would.
Black and white photography. No digital.
They dumbed the stuff down so that we had to figure out the scale. So we're going, okay, what is the standard width of a Japanese road? Or what is the standard height of a Japanese? Cause, if somebody invaded Japan, we would obviously defend our allies. So our job was to put together helicopter landing, zones and make sure that the Marines or whoever went in didn't run into everything. And then I got lucky. I was fortunate. I had a mentor, and I don't know why we became simpatico, but he was a Mustang, Lieutenant Commander Dan Turbyville. We called him Dr. Dan, the photography man. He taught geography in colleges. Ultimately, Dan made captain, wrote a couple of books, but just a great friend. And so, he was the air intelligence officer for the world famous VAQ-309 Axeman. We flew the electric intruder, electronic jammer, but we also had, shrike capability. In other words, anti-radiation missiles. So if you ever saw one of my favorite movies, more so than Officer and a Gentleman, that would be Flight of the Intruder.
Right.
So that was a squadron I served with that our whole job was what they call Iron Hand. Air Force calls it Wild Weasel, but it was basically fly out there, hope the enemy radar picks you up and shoots at you, and then you shoot them back. So kind of a decoy, but at least, and then later on we had, ICAP 2 Prowlers. And during that time I got some really interesting, active duties because I was volunteering for everything. I was trying to get back on active duty, but it was the Cold War. And there just wasn't a lot of air intelligence officer billets available. So I did work for NIS. In fact, it's my shaving mug. I have a fancy Naval Investigative Service shaving mug with my name on it when I did 2 weeks working on a, now we all know it as NCIS. And that was really interesting. And there's a great anecdote I wish I could share, but I ran into a little problem with an Army warrant officer. I was staying at my brother's, I really liked my brother. I love my brother, and I always looked up to him. He was a major at the time back at Fort Belvoir, and he had an interesting Air Force career. But at the time he was back in intelligence. And so I go, hey, I got 2 weeks in Washington DC. He said, great, you stay with me at Fort Belvoir. That'll be awesome. Well, I get there and he goes TDY, And so anyway, there was a problem between his daughter and one of the local kids, and this Army warrant officer with, I think they call it CID, criminal investigative, he comes in and he's got this attitude, who are you and why are you here? He wants to talk to Major Maccabee. Well, sorry, you got Lieutenant Maccabee, United States Naval Reserve. Well, what are you doing here? I'm on special active duty. Well, what are you doing? I said, you don't have a need to know. I said, you can look at my orders. So I showed him my orders. He goes, well, tell me what you're doing here. And I said, if you want to know, you can talk to the admiral at, Nick 13. And because he was being such a butt, I kept telling him, last time I looked, a naval lieutenant outranks an Army warrant officer because he was like a, what do they have, W-1, O-5 now?
W-2, yeah,
he was a, he was a W-1, but it was just his attitude. But it was not a fun active duty in that we were doing kind of spy stuff. We were investigating Marine security guards at the Moscow embassy. Probably nobody remembers that, but there were some problems with some Marine security guards, and it was interesting work, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't really sexy or not, you know, like we're going to do air warfare planning, you know, that stuff's kind of fun. You know, there's the Kirov. How are we going to kill it? And, sorry to be such a smart ass about it, but you know, my job was to train air crews so that we weren't surprised. You know, we had three different mottos in naval intelligence. Naval intelligence, in God we trust, all others we monitor. If you want to be a good naval intelligence officer, you have to be able to lie with a straight face. And then, you plan for the worst and hope for the best. So our job was to figure out what's the absolute worst case scenario. What's the absolute worst thing these guys could do to us? How do we defeat that? And fortunately for the United States Navy, I can't speak now because it's 30 some years ago, but the Grumman EA-6B Prowler was virtually, it was the best electronic warfare in the, there was at times I looked at it and go, Chinese or Russians ever cross that line? They're not, they're going to have no idea.
Is the Prowler the one with the circular dome on top of it?
No. That's the,
The AWACS?
Yeah, that's the Navy's version of the AWACS. No, the Prowler, would
it's
jam.
Kind of like the
now it's the
intruder.
But they put four seats, and then in Iraq, they started putting, three NFOs or electronic countermeasures officers, ECMOs. They were a little bit excessive, so they started, putting guys through language school, and so they'd be up there listening because it has that capability to intercept and, you know, jam radars and really do all kinds of just, we called it PFM, some of the stuff that it would do. And the weird thing was, I didn't realize it until I was looking at some old, I'm one of the administrators for the squadron's Facebook page. Squadron got decommissioned. They did actually ultimately go over to Gulf War One, but I was the only one. The skipper and I were the only one that carried active top secret security clearance. All the rest of the air crew were only at the secret level. And of course, the avionics guys, they were at secret level. But I was myself and the skipper were the only ones that had the top secret clearance. But it was a neat aircraft, great time, just privileged to be in that unit.
And that's just a great opportunity. Like you said, intel and aircraft, I mean, that's kind of the best of both worlds in that aspect. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest again, Clark McAbee, United States Navy Lieutenant. We'll be right back.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. And there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that. And it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet. Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Billy Pilgrim from my buddy Doug Tooley from BNT 241-3474. You need to know that number, 241-3474, for the best service. Doug and his great crew at BNT makes TV so easy. They're the experts. They do TV wall mounts. They did one for us. TV antennas, surround sound. They can even set up your RV or set up your boat. Doug doesn't do dishes, but he'll dust behind your TV. So for all your TV entertainment needs, no matter what it is, call the local guys. Call my buddy Doug Tooley, the nicest man in the world, at 241-3474. 241-3474. They'll be there on time. They'll get the job done on time, and you're good to go.
With over 60 years of combined experience, let us, your locally owned TV guys help you. We know what we are doing. You can trust us. Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
Doug makes TV easy.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
Never fight another war. There are a lot of perfect questions as to what's worth fighting for. And there are a lot of perfect fools who refuse to read the writing on the wall. But the truth is there are people who have made it crystal clear that it is their holy mission to destroy all we hold dear. And they are busily out searching for the fire to make this towering nation fall. Now we can just sit back and wait till they spill more precious blood, or we can seek these cowards out and nip their slaughter in the bud. Adios, sweet home and family. I am off to fight a war that must be won. You will know why I'm going when you see the snow-white rose of Arlington.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions and the Snow-White Rose of Arlington. Those that sacrifice, those that see the writing on the wall, those that step up to the plate, those that put their lives on the line. They have the courage, they have the leadership, and they make the difference for our nation. They make the difference for our military. This morning, our guest, Lieutenant Clark McAbee, intel officer, looking at the writing on the wall, looking forward in his career as he's working with in the Navy there, as the spectrum of the Cold War and the enemy, I believe was probably the Russians at that time, and constantly trying to guess forward, not outguess, but guess forward what the next step might be so that we can protect our nation and all of those beliefs that we have in our country here. Good morning again, Clark. We're getting down to the last minute here, and I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for your service. And I don't care if you served as a reservist or not. You wore the uniform. You went through all of the training. You did what needed to be done, and if you had gotten the call, you'd have been gone for however long it may have been. And so thank you again for being here. We're going to have you come back again because I want to talk to you more about the museums and the jobs that you're working with right now down in Clear Lake. And there's so many great things that we can talk about in a full spectrum, especially concerning the Northern California Veterans Museum. Finish telling us about your career as an intel officer.
There's a couple highlights I really want to talk about. You know, one of my proudest moments was when I got asked, and any of you guys, gals in the Navy, especially older guys and gals like Rob and I got asked when I was an intel officer for the Axemen, I got asked by a chief candidate to be his legal counsel. And at his chief's initiation, well, you know, I was pretty naive thinking, okay, I'm fairly well spoken. I have a college degree. I have a history major. I passed English. I can defend this guy. No, you can't defend this guy. You can open your mouth and say really smart things, but he's going to suffer because that's what a chief initiation is all about. There's going to be, you know, they're going to earn,
those anchors.
They're going to earn those anchors.
That's right.
And so, but that was an honor. And for much of my time there, I worked alone in my own office, which was kind of cool. Everybody had a cipher lock. Mine was the only skiff in the squadron, so I could go in there and quietly read really interesting secret stuff. I could tell you all about the Falklands Air War. Props to the Argentinian pilots. They had big cojones to do what they did, no matter what you think politically. But I finally got this salty second class intelligence specialist, and he'd been out aboard a carrier and so forth, and he was a godsend. And he was going to school, and he ultimately became a fleet air intelligence officer. We were down in Alameda getting ready to get on board the USS Enterprise and do 3 weeks of our active duty. We alternated air war on over ground, 1 2-week act duty, and then the next year we went out on board the aircraft carrier. And I can't even remember who told me. It might have been my skipper, American Red Cross. Lieutenant McAbee, just want to inform you that Petty Officer Walsh's father passed away late yesterday. So, So I had to tell him, and totally unexpected. You know, I had to tell us, oh, let's see, Tom was probably 21, 22. I was probably about 30 at the time. And, you know, and then I had to take him to the airport. And so that was tough. And, you know, he was a sailor, and he was a good sailor. And he sucked it up. And the reason I get emotional is his petty officer, who had just lost his father, was worried more about us and the civic team not having him on the boat. He wasn't going to go to sea with us. And he obviously felt the loss of his father, but he felt, I didn't know this was going to happen, but
it's okay. It's part of the healing process.
He felt he was letting us down. And I've always looked back on that and thought, you know, that's what shipmate means. You know, people are brother. You know, some people don't understand that. Rob gets it. Other guys get it.
Camaraderie.
But, you know, here is a young kid, lost his father totally unexpectedly in Norfolk, Virginia. And then I was a little bit upset because they wanted to, in one-way flight, they wanted to charge him an arm and leg. And I got all naval officer, not so much officer and a gentleman, because I actually was an officer and a gentleman. And I kind of leaned over the counter at the customer service guy selling him an airline ticket. And I said, listen, I said, step away, Tom. I said, listen, he just lost his father, and I think you should give him some sort of break. He's in the military. He's on orders. Now he's got to go fly back to Norfolk. And she wouldn't do it, so that always kind of rankled me. But to add on a happier note, I was a division officer when I was back in a ground-pounding intelligence unit, and I feel really honored and privileged in that I worked hard enough and encouraged the troops, male and female. Every one of my enlisted, which was, I think, 30 people in the division. I was the enlisted division officer for the unit. They all took and passed their promotion exam, and so they all got advanced. Those that were eligible, had time and rate, they all got advanced. And, you know, that was mostly their work, but, you know, I felt I helped them out. I encouraged them. You know, I talked to them, you know, every drill week, and I said, it's coming up. Get ready.
Mentorship. You've got to have a mentor because it's tough doing it by yourself. And that's part of what the whole leadership deal is. That's what and that's what the leaders, a good chief does that too, mentors. That's the whole reason you're there, is to get them to the position where you're at.
Do I have time for one chief story?
You do.
So the reason I'm here today, ladies and gentlemen, is because I was taught early in my career, you always listen to your chief. And so I'm leaving Pensacola, and I go into one of the bars that I never got to while I was there. I'm commissioned. I'm in uniform. And it's a Navy kind of bar. And there's this kind of chubby Submariner chief. So you got this future Airedale, and then you got this Submariner chief. And, you know, he invited me over. And so he explained to me that, you know, listen to your chiefs. And so I learned early on to listen to my chiefs. I've also partied overseas with chiefs, courtesy of the United States Air Force. That was a legendary liberty. And so when Rob said, because I'm not a combat vet, you know, I was a weekend warrior, and, you know, never got that call, but, you know, did my part, raised my right hand. And so when Rob said, I want you on the show, I go, you gotta listen to my chief.
Hey, you know what? I really appreciate you being here. You know, we've known each other for a few years now. We really have never had a chance to just sit down and really discuss and talk about all our careers or about our museum opportunities that we've had. And, you know, it's always been hit and miss with good stories and things like that, but never had a chance to just sit down and get some really good understanding. And so I just want to say thank you once again for being here. You know, I get emotional every weekend on this show. Sometimes I'm embarrassed about it. Sometimes it just is what it is. Yeah. But you know, when we're passionate about your life, you're passionate about where you've been, you feel fortunate and lucky to be alive and to be here. Mm-hmm. You can't help get emotional about that sometimes. Especially when we serve with great people, the camaraderie, yeah. and then to lose people that have been instrumental in our lives. Mm-hmm. Or that we've been instrumental in their lives. You've been listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest, Lieutenant Clark Mackby, United States Navy Reserve. And once again, thank you, Clark, for being here. Thank you for your service to our nation. And look forward to it. We'll have another show when we can talk about museums and taking care of our historical aspect of California.
Yeah, definitely my privilege and honor, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. You've been listening to Battlefield Expressions.